Chapter 31. The earth was soft from the night's rain, and the spoor deep-trodden. The heels had bitten in under Hendry's weight, so they followed fast. Watching Sergeant Jacques work, Bruce felt his anxiety abating, for although the footprints were so easy to follow in these early stages that it was no test of his ability, yet from the way he moved swiftly along, half-crouched and wholly absorbed, occasionally glancing ahead to pick up the run of the spoor, stopping now and then to touch the earth and determine its texture, Bruce could tell that this man knew his business. Through the open forest, with tufted grass below, holding steadily south by east, Hendry led them straight towards the Rhodesian border. And after the first 2 hours, Bruce knew they had not gained upon him. Hendry was still 8 hours ahead, and at the pace he was setting, 8 hours' start was something like 30 miles in distance. Bruce looked over his shoulder at the sun, where it lay wedged between two vast piles of cumulus nimbus. There in the sky were the two elements which could defeat him. Time. There were perhaps 2 more hours of daylight. With the onset of night, they would be forced to halt. Rain. The clouds were swollen and dark blue round the edges. As Bruce watched, the lightning lit them internally, and at a count of 10 the thunder grumbled suddenly. If it rained again before morning, there would be no spoor to follow. "We must move faster," said Bruce. Sergeant Jacques straightened up and looked at Bruce as though he were a stranger. He had forgotten his existence. "The earth hardens," Jacques pointed at the spoor, and Bruce saw that in the last half hour the soil had become gritty and compacted. Hendry's heels no longer broke the crust. "It is unwise to run on such a lean trail." Again Bruce looked back at the menace of gathering clouds. "We must take the chance," he decided. "As you wish," grunted Jack, and transferred his rifle to his other shoulder, hitched up his belt, and settled the steel helmet more firmly on his head. "Allez." They trotted on through the forest towards the southeast. Within a mile, Bruce's body had settled into the automatic rhythm of his run, leaving his mind free. He thought about Wally Hendry, saw again the little eyes and round them the puffy, folded skin, and the mouth below, thin and merciless, the obscene ginger stubble of beard. He could almost smell him. His nostrils flared at the memory of the rank redhead's body odour. Unclean, he thought. Unclean mind and unclean body. His hatred of Wally Hendry was a tangible thing. He could feel it sitting heavily at the base of his throat, tingling in his fingertips, and giving strength to his legs. And yet there was something else. Suddenly Bruce grinned, a wolfish baring of his teeth. That tingling in his fingertips was not all hatred. A little of it was excitement. What a complex thing is a man, he thought. He can never hold one emotion. There are always others to confuse it. Here I am, hunting the thing that I most loathe and hate, and I'm enjoying it. Completely unrelated to the hatred is the thrill of hunting the most dangerous and cunning game of all, man. I've always enjoyed the chase, he thought. It has been bred into me, for my blood is that of the men who hunted and fought with Africa as the prize. The hunting of this man will give me pleasure. If ever a man deserved to die, it is Wally Hendry. I am the plaintiff, the judge, and the executioner. Sergeant Jacques stopped so suddenly that Bruce ran into him and they nearly fell. "What is it?" panted Bruce, coming back to reality. "Look." The earth ahead of them was churned and broken. "Zebra," groaned Bruce, recognizing the round, uncloven hoof prints. "God damn it to hell of all the filthy luck." "A big herd," Jacques agreed. "Spread out, feeding." As far ahead as they could see through the forest, the herd had wiped out Hendry's tracks. "We'll have to cast forward." Bruce's voice was agonized by his impatience. He turned to the nearest tree and hacked at it with his bayonet, blazing it to mark the end of the trail, swearing softly, venting his disappointment on the trunk. "Only another hour to sunset," he whispered. "Please let us pick him up again before dark." Sergeant Jacques was already moving forward, following the approximate line of Hendry's travel, trying vainly to recognise a single footprint through the havoc created there by the passage of thousands of hooves. Bruce hurried to join him, and they moved out on his flank. They zigzagged slowly ahead, almost meeting on the inward leg of each track, and then separating again to a distance of 100 yards. There it was. Bruce dropped to his knees to make sure. Just the outline of the toe cap showing from under the spore of an old zebra stallion. Bruce whistled, a windy sound through his dry lips, and Jacques came quickly. One quick look, then. Yes, he is holding water the right now. He raised his eyes and squinted ahead, marking a tree which was directly in line with the run of the spore. They went forward. There's the herd, Bruce pointed at the flicker of a grey body through the trees. They've got our wind. A zebra snorted, and then there was a rumbling, a low, blurred drumming of hooves as the herd ran. Through the trees, Bruce caught glimpses of the animals on the near side of the herd. Too far off to show the stripes, looking like fat grey ponies as they galloped, ears up, black-maned heads nodding. Then they were gone, and the sound of their flight dwindled. "At least they haven't run along the spore," muttered Bruce. And then bitterly, "Damn them, the stupid little donkeys. They've cost us an hour, a whole priceless hour." Desperately searching, wild with haste, they worked back and forth. The sun was below the trees. Already the air was cooling in the short African dusk. Another 15 minutes and it would be dark. Then abruptly the forest ended, and they came out on the edge of a vley. Open as wheatland, pastured with green waist-high grass, hemmed in by the forest, it stretched ahead of them for nearly 2 miles. Dotted along it were clumps of ivory palms, with each graceful stem ending in an untidy cluster of leaves. Troops of guinea fowls were scratching and chirruping along the edge of the clearing, and near the far end a herd of buffalo formed a dark mass as they grazed beneath a canopy of white egrets. In the forest beyond the clearing, rising perhaps 300 feet out of it, stood a kopje of tumbled granite. The great slabs of rock with their sheer sides and square tops looked like a ruined castle. The low sun struck it and gave the rock an orange warmth. But Bruce had no time to admire the scene. His eyes were on the earth, searching for the prints of Hendry's jungle boots. Out on his left, Sergeant Jacques whistled sharply, and Bruce felt the leap of excitement in his chest. He ran across to the crouching gendarme. "It has come away," Jacques pointed at the spore that was strung ahead of them like beads on a string, skirting the edge of the vley, each depression filled with shadow and standing out clearly on the sandy grey earth. "Too late," groaned Bruce. "Damn those bloody zebra." The light was fading so swiftly it seemed as though it were a stage effect. "Follow it." Bruce's voice was sharp with helpless frustration. "Follow it as long as you can." It was not a quarter of a mile further on that Jacques rose out of his crouch, and only the white of his teeth showed in the darkness as he spoke. "We will lose it again if we go on." "All right." Bruce unslung his rifle with weary resignation. He knew that Wally Hendry was at least 40 miles ahead of them, more if he kept travelling after dark. The spore was cold. If this had been an ordinary hunt, he would long ago have broken off the chase. He looked up at the sky. In the north the stars were fat and yellow, but above them, and to the south, it was black with cloud. "Don't let it rain," he whispered. "Please, God, don't let it rain." The night was long. Bruce slept once for perhaps 2 hours, and then the strength of his hatred woke him. He lay flat upon his back and stared up at the sky. It was all dark with clouds, only occasionally they opened and let the stars shine briefly through. "It must not rain. It must not rain." He repeated it like a prayer, staring up at the dark sky, concentrating upon it as though by the force of his mind he could control the elements. There were lions hunting in the forest. He heard the male roaring, moving up from the south. And once his two lionesses answered him. They killed a little before dawn, and Bruce lay on the hard earth and listened to their jubilation over the kill. Then there was silence as they began to feed. "That I might have success as well," he thought. "I do not often ask for favours, Lord, but grant me this one. I ask it not only for myself, but for Shemaine and the others." In his mind he saw again the two children lying where Hendry had shot them, the smear of mingled blood and chocolate across the boy's cheek. "He deserves to die," prayed Bruce. "So please don't let it rain." As long as the night had been, that quickly came the dawn, a grey dawn, gloomy with low cloud. "Will it go?" Bruce asked for the 20th time, and this time Jacques looked up from where he knelt beside the spore. "We can try now." They moved off slowly, with Jacques leading, doubled over to peer short-sightedly at the earth, and Bruce close behind him, bedevilled by his impatience and anxiety, lifting his head every dozen paces to the dirty grey roof of cloud. The light strengthened, and the circle of their vision opened from 6 feet to as many yards, to 100, so they could make out the tops of the ivory palms, shaggy against the grey cloud. Jacques broke into a trot, and ahead of them was the end of the clearing and the beginning of the forest. 200 yards beyond rose the massive pile of the kopje, in the early light looking more than ever like a castle, turreted and sheer. There was something formidable in its outline. It seemed to brood above them, and Bruce looked away from it uneasily. Cold, and with enough weight behind it to sting, the first raindrop splashed against Bruce's cheek. "Oh, no," he protested, and stopped. Jacques straightened up from the spore, and he too looked at the sky. "It is finished. In 5 minutes there will be nothing to follow." Another drop hit Bruce's upturned face, and he blinked back the tears of anger and frustration that pricked the rims of his eyelids. Faster now, tapping on his helmet, plopping onto his shoulders and face, the rain fell. "Quickly," cried Bruce, "follow as long as you can." Jacques opened his mouth to speak, but before a word came out he was flung backwards, punched over as though by an invisible fist, his helmet flying from his head as he fell, and his rifle clattering on the earth. Simultaneously, Bruce felt the bullet pass him, disrupting the air, so the wind of it flattened his shirt against his chest, cracking viciously in his ears, leaving him dazedly looking down at Sergeant Jacques' body. It lay with arms thrown wide, the jaw and the side of the head below the ear torn away, white bone and blood bubbling over it. The trunk twitched convulsively, and the hands fluttered like trapped birds. Then, flat-sounding through the rain, he heard the report of the rifle. "The kopje," screamed Bruce's brain. "He's lying in the kopje." And Bruce moved, twisting sideways, starting to run.